I'm Tamara Steele. In this week's show, changes may be coming again for French immersion in New Brunswick. One well-known face will not reoffer for the upcoming municipal elections, and UNB St. John's new vice president reflects on the past year. Last year was a busy one for the new vice president of UNB St. John. Dr. Petra Hoff joined the university in March after the retirement of Robert McKinnon. Pulse MB's Brad Perry spoke with Dr. Hoff in December about some of the highlights of her first year at the university.
Take me back through 2019. What have been some of the things that you've seen as highlights for UNB St. John this year?
Let me start on a personal note because, as you know, I started new in my position here at UNB in St. John in March. So coming to UNB St. John was an incredible move for myself and, I have to say, the best choice of my life. UNB in general, St. John campus in particular, is an amazing place to be. Amazing people, committed, dedicated people who deeply care about their students. And I got to know my colleagues here as engaged citizens who value community and are actively engaged in their community. And that's something that I was passionate about, and I'm excited to be here. Building on what has already started and the momentum that was in place, started by my predecessor, Dr. Robert McKinnon, we worked tirelessly on implementing the new academic plan, which is based on three priorities: health, coastal studies, business, social, and community studies. So working on those areas was a highlight for me. Academic development is very important to me. But then on the other hand side, we also had great things happening, like the new residence, the LPN-BN announcement, and the MBA program move. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to touch briefly on those three topics there. Of course, first off, the most recent one, or one of the more recent ones, was the bridging program for the LPN to RN. The provincial government announced the 10-year agreement between UNB St. John and the province, as well as with Université de Moncton. So why is that program going to be so crucial going forward over the next few years?
There are several reasons for it. First of all, it is a program that builds on prior knowledge and acknowledging prior learning. So people or LPNs who have done their education already at the college can now bridge into the Bachelor of Nursing program and add another 2 years after the bridging, and then are eligible to apply to become a registered nurse. So it adds another pathway into nursing that helps to address one of our major issues here in New Brunswick, namely the shortage of nurses.
And, of course, as well, more recently, and it's one we've chatted about already as well, is the new residence building coming to campus. So how are things progressing with that project so far?
Yeah, that's like you mentioned. We had the very exciting groundbreaking event earlier this year, and actually later this year, but earlier. And we are still on time. We are on time and budget, which is something that makes me very happy. And are planning to have everything ready for September 2020 for the start of the new academic year.
That's perfect. And I bet there's a lot of excitement around the campus, not only among staff, but students as well, to see this new building coming.
Oh, yeah. Students are very excited, especially because this is the first geothermally heated and cooled residence at UNB. And students, as we all know very well, the next generation of young people are caring deeply about their environment and the environmental impact they have. So having this sustainable model is very important to them. So students are excited. The community is excited about it as well, because once the students are leaving after the school year is over in May 2021, this residence, as our others, will be open as hotel over the summer.
And also, of course, it was unveiled plans earlier this year as well to move UNB St. John's MBA program to the uptown area. I guess, are there any updates on that particular project at this point?
Yes, you know, we relocated the instructional space to uptown to strengthen the role of the MBA program for the business, social, and entrepreneurial fabric of our community. And I'm very excited about this opportunity, especially as a majority of our students in the MBA program are international students, and having them uptown contributes to the province's population growth strategy and is another example of the strong partnership UNB has with the province.
Now, has the program fully moved up here yet, or is only portions of the program that are currently in the uptown?
There is portions uptown, and we hope to continue or finalize everything early next year.
And speaking of next year, of course, 2020 is just around the corner here now. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to in the new year for UNB St. John?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, one of the pillars that were identified before I came already here, the academic priorities. So I'm looking forward to working on this, on new academic programs that will support, build on our expertise, but also support the needs of the province, especially in the health area, but also in the coastal studies area and in the business area, as we had mentioned already before. So I'm looking forward to seeing this unfold in the new year.
I'm Brad Perry.
New Brunswick's education minister is hoping to make much-needed changes to the province's French immersion program. Dominic Carty says they'll be testing out a new program in a small number of schools in September. Pulse MB's Danielle McCready chatted with him about the changes and why the Department of Education wanted to make them.
Tell me a little bit about your plan right now.
Well, the plan is still the same as when this plan was introduced, which was last fall with the launch of the government's green paper on education, when all the details that there are really were laid out at that point, that we're planning starting in September of this year in a small number of schools that will be identified based on their interest in participating, trying out a new program to take the best from hopefully the programs we currently have and from other second language programs around the world to make sure we can make it as easy as possible for as many kids in New Brunswick schools as possible to learn a second language, which is the sort of thing we should learn the same time we're learning math and science. We should be learning how to speak in other languages, especially in both of our provinces' official languages.
So throughout this process of, developing the pilot project, what are some of the struggles and downsides you guys have seen in the French immersion program as it is right now?
There are sort of two main areas, I think, that really come up consistently. So the first is that you get a good number of New Brunswick kids who just can't take French immersion. It's not offered in their school. It's just not available. And so I don't think we would accept it if we just told kids who lived in, in a poorer community or in a rural community, if we just said, we don't have the cash to offer you guys math programming because we've got this really great program we're offering in the city. So sorry, you're going to have to settle for second best. So I always get concerned when I hear folks talking about how great French immersion is, and not to criticize that program. And there are lots of really good, really excellent teachers and French immersion classrooms doing really good work. But there are a whole lot of kids who are left out of that conversation. And we also have a system where, because of our inclusion system in the province, which I support, but we end up by having some streaming going on that we also don't like to talk about, where the kids who've got perhaps behavioral issues and others, they end up being streamed into the core English program, and French immersion ends up being seen as a program more for high flyers. And the numbers around that are pretty clear, so that's a concern I have. So at the other end, we have a problem at the high school level, which affects the whole school system, not just French immersion, but you feel it particularly strongly for the kids who take immersion, that because we have such strong requirements for graduation in terms of very specific classes that students have to take, a lot of the kids end up by dropping out of French immersion because they're trying to get their marks up those last few points to get into a trade school or university or wherever, and so they drop out of immersion in grade 10. So we need to change the way that we handle graduation requirements and give students more opportunities to take electives. And I think that'll help with some of the students continuing on with classes in French. But to me, the bigger issue is around that access and equity. We need, as a bilingual province, to have a French language training system that's available for every single student in the province and gives them a good shot, if they want to do the work, at becoming bilingual. And at the very least, being able to have a conversation with folks from the province's other official language community.
Some of the other concerns is the effectiveness as well as the French language program and, whether people are actually retaining some of this knowledge and this teaching. What are you guys seeing around that, and what are, some of the numbers of people who can still consistently speak French after, years in the program?
Well, and there ends up being lots of fights around this, because the numbers from the Auditor General's report on education last year, she talked about this and said, there's only around 10% of students who finish at the level that the program identifies itself as being the standard for success. So I get people saying, but if you look at the kids who drop out in grade 10 or the kids who are down at this other level, the numbers get up towards 40%, which still isn't great. But yeah, I think it's only fair to judge a system against the standard that it created for itself. So there are clearly issues there. And I think some of those go back again to, rather than arguing about is French immersion good or bad, it should be, why are we having those problems with retention? And part of the reason is And I think the premier has talked about this a lot, and it's a good way of explaining the problem. Yeah, he was in late middle age and in politics after a lifetime of working in a New Brunswick business before he really understood French New Brunswick, before he had the chance to visit, meet, and talk with people. And so we're talking here about in our province about having two language and cultural communities, and often we don't see or talk to each other. So figuring out ways that we can learn about each other in a more face-to-face way, I think, has got to be part of the education system, because education is all about taking our values and our culture, which we should be proud of as much as Anglophones, as Francophones, and about finding ways to share and talk with each other about our shared experiences, what makes us different, what makes us the same. And I think we've shied away from that because there's always that fear if you talk about language and culture, you're just going to have an explosion. Chris Austin, I think, unfortunately, played that card by trying to whip up a bit of controversy around this issue, which succeeded. And then you see on the other side, Kevin Vickers doing the same thing today, taking a screenshot of the original inaccurate Telegraph Journal headline and making it sound like I was trying to get rid of French immersion when even the people who wrote the original story have accepted that is absolutely not the case. That's false. He's still pushing that message out there. But just because a conversation is difficult to have, and just because folks like Mr. Austin and Mr. Vickers want to play games with this, doesn't mean that it's not important and doesn't mean that I shouldn't try even harder to have a fact-based, evidence-based conversation that ends up with one ideological goal alone, which is making sure our kids get the best possible education, which includes learning other languages, because the evidence around the world is clear on that. It's good for you. It helps keep your brain active. It helps increase your lifetime earnings. All good stuff. So let's try and get some of this partisan foolishness out of this and have a conversation based on facts. My message is really clear that what I'm here to do is to try and make sure that more New Brunswickers can talk to Francophone New Brunswickers in their first language, the same way that over 9 out of 10 Francophones can speak English. There's no reason we can't be up at the same level. And so my message is that I'm trying to see if we can find a better way of doing that, because after 50 years, the tools we have tried, which we argue about over and over and over again, one thing no one can really argue about is we haven't seen the results that we need. Our population in Anglophone New Brunswick is still overwhelmingly not bilingual. So let's see if we can move towards that goal of having a more bilingual province, which will make our province richer. It'll give people more opportunities to get jobs. But most important, getting back to your point, it'll give us the ability to talk to each other. My message in the end is I'm trying to work to make that system better. If the current system ends up by looking like it's giving better results, I've got no problem saying I'm wrong and no problem in saying, let's stop this. Let's go back to what we had before. Looking at the evidence of 50 years and the faith that I have in our people in our province, I am convinced we can do better. But that's going to mean folks like Mr. Vickers and Mr. Austin have got to put the partisanship aside and start working together. And so for them and anyone else, my door is open to talk about how we can make this system better. And folks who want to reach out and share their ideas, encourage the folks who are listening to our conversation, they can call me at 238-5550. They can write to me, dominic.cardi@gnb.ca, and they can share their ideas as well, because this has got to be about our whole province, because there's nothing more important than our education system.
I'm Danielle McCready.
Spring 2020 will bring flowers, potential flooding, and new faces on municipal councils and at district education councils. Rob Fowler, longtime chair of the Anglophone South District Education Council, is not reoffering this year. He has watched many governments come and go and worked with several education ministers. I spoke with him in December about his many years as chair of the District Education Council. How have you seen education change, would you say?
I think we've gone through a number of phases, particularly there was a strong emphasis on inclusion with Jody Carr took office. That's been the biggest single change, but I think it's pretty much stayed the same beyond that major change in that respect.
And what are the challenges facing education outside of maybe financial ones?
Well, finances are always an issue, but I think classroom composition is a huge concern for everybody. Our kids with special needs are percentage-wise seems to be growing exponentially. And it takes money, it takes resources, and it takes careful planning to make sure that they're dealt with and handled in a proper way and get the best experience they can get.
And you point out, too, in previous interviews and at meetings that you can't say no.
No, you can't. I mean, if a child shows up in the system and requires support, you're not able to say we're out of budget, come back next year. You have to find that from some other line item.
And with the Syrian influx in the last 4 years or 5 years, how has that changed education in St. John in particular?
Well, it's required its own set of resources in terms of you know, language translators, and I know that they've got some teams set up specifically to handle newcomers and make sure the transition is smooth for them. So it's taken quite a bit in terms of background resources just to make sure that they can adjust in a good way.
And I think, as I recall, there was quite a hustle late 2015, early 2016.
Yeah, I'm not sure when the big influx was. It was a bit of a blip, but hats off to staff. I mean, they did a phenomenal job of getting things in place. And I know you go into a school like Hayes and White where there's a significant newcomer population, and even the bulletin boards in both languages, which is kind of neat to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we've had some controversial 409s in the last few years. obviously, with declining populations in schools, that process is not going away. So the more controversial ones, I think about Browns Flat and some other schools. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from that process?
Well, it's always a challenge because, you know, particularly in rural areas where they see themselves as being under attack. And I know years ago the province looked at a small schools, rural schools policy to try and make them whole the same way that the urban schools were. But, I mean, the resources required were just too cost prohibitive to be able to do that. And the challenge is always, you know, transportation, the concerns about just how far they're going to have to go on a bus, and is it realistic? And I know we looked at Lawrence Station as an example several years ago now, and those kids who would have been kindergarten to grade five would have, some of them would have been on a bus an hour and a half each way, so twice a day, and that's just not acceptable. But I think, you know, you have to listen. You have to be concerned about what the parents bring to the table in terms of, you know, in a lot of cases they like the smaller schools, the smaller classes, but it's a challenge when you're trying to run a district on shrinking budgets to be able to provide the proper education experience for everybody. And when you have two small schools relatively close, you're splitting resources that you can't really afford.
And let's just paint the picture with what's happening this year with Morna. Mm-hmm. What is the situation there with those schools and how many kids are in those schools?
Well, we've seen Morna drop a little bit, and some of it is, to the parents' credit, a result of French immersion and kids having to leave in order to be able to get to it. But the demand is not there to create its own French immersion class. So that's a challenge, obviously. But what we're seeing is the original proposal, which would have seen the three schools in the area, two in Grand Bay and the one in Morna, combined in place for a new school. Those numbers have dropped from 350, 375 down to 275. And I think there's just not in the current fiscal climate, the province faces an opportunity or an appetite to build a $30 million or a $25 million school for a declining population of 275 kids or less. So in what's happened in the same token, the schools on the west side, thinking of St. Rose in particular, it's about 50% full, has room for a couple hundred kids. So it makes sense to at least look at the option of moving the kids from Morna into the west side schools. I mean, it's adjacent collection areas, so it's not a huge move in terms of transportation. And some kids might even have a shorter ride to school than they do now. But either way, it's not significant difference in transportation. So, you know, we have to look at things like that and be able to combine resources and deliver a better experience.
So while it's been controversial, I've heard since there's been discussion about a new K-8 in St. John, And we've seen, I don't know if I've ever seen this before, where Develop St. John is supportive of this and some other organizations.
Yep.
And a lot of people have said that the process, the 409s in the St. John area, made this process possible. It supported this process in terms
Absolutely.
Of information.
I mean, people like to complain about the 409 process. They don't feel they have input. But realistically, DECs are elected to kickstart that conversation when necessary. Put a proposal out on the floor and let people kick at it. And I think the South End School is a prime example of how well that worked. We did a seven-school study. And at the end of that, the proposals that we went to the public with were torn apart, revamped. And at the end of the day, we thought, you know something? None of those are what we really want to do. we've come up with a better option, which is the new K-8 school for Prince Charles St. John the Baptist Cambridge. As a result of that consultation, went back to the public a second time, which is time-consuming and stressful for everybody. But out of that, we got complete buy-in. I mean, St. John Living, BCAPI, the PSSCs, Jim Irving, Lino Celeste, all of the mayors, the counselors, the YMCA, the partners in the schools are behind this, 150%. So it's the ideal outcome from a 409. So I think the 409 process itself works if people accept it and work with it. It's a way to get your point across.
And for a K-8 uptown or in the South Central Peninsula, which mm-hmm. schools is that? St. John the Baptist? And
it would replace St. John the Baptist, King Edward, and Prince Charles.
Right. And so we've discussed this previously, but no official word on whether any money is coming for that this year.
No, and we're hopeful that if you look at the capital budget that was allocated to the Department of Education, there's still $3 million that they haven't explained where it's going, and we're hopeful that there's some design and perhaps land acquisition money in that for our project.
That's my conversation with Rob Fowler, outgoing chair of the Anglophone South District Education Council. That's it for this week's show. I'm Tavera Steele.